Welcome back to Clinician's Brief Partner Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Beth Mollison, a small animal veterinarian and veterinary officer here at Clinician's Brief. I want to thank BioNote, the manufacturer of in-clinic analyzers as quantitative tests, for being the sponsor of today's episode, in which we are going to talk to Dr. Paul Soihofsky. Today, we'll be asking him to share his clinical experience in differentiating heart disease from primary respiratory disease in those cats that are presented in acute respiratory distress. I know everyone out there knows what we're talking about. So Dr. Soihofsky, thank you so much for being here. I was hoping you would kick us off by telling our audience a little bit about yourself and your professional background, if you don't mind.
Well, good morning and hello to everyone. And thank you again for this opportunity. I'm not much of a person to talk about myself, but I guess, okay. Lifetime Buffalo, New York person. I went to undergraduate school at Canisius College, which is now Canisius University in Buffalo. And then I attended veterinary school at the University of Tennessee, and I graduated in 1990. After that, I've pretty much been doing small animal medicine in private practice since that point onward. I'm an owner of a clinic in an outer suburb of Buffalo. I have two other small animal veterinarians that work with me, and it's been a wonderful, wonderful career. So a little shout out. I know it has nothing to do with this topic, but for any young listeners, if you are considering a career in veterinary medicine, huge two pluses, huge thumbs up. You're going to love it.
I love it. We love someone that is passionate about their profession. But more importantly, are you a Buffalo Bills fan?
Always. And in this area, usually we either end or start every conversation with go Bills.
Fair enough. I'm a Bengals fan, so maybe we just can leave that subject light for now. But all right. So we can dive right into this clinical challenge that, like I said, I feel like we all encounter. Everybody listening knows what we're talking about. You get that cat that presents with respiratory signs and, of course, subsequent difficulty of doing our job and trying to distinguish, is this cardiac disease or is it primary respiratory disease? And unlike in dogs, in which coughing is, of course, a common sign of heart disease, in cats, it's less frequently associated. So that makes our job even harder. And although cats may occasionally present with coughing, heart disease, as we know, more often remains silent until we do get fulminant heart failure or a serious complication such as thromboembolism. And when cats are presented in respiratory distress, as we all know, quickly determining whether the issue is cardiac or respiratory in origin is crucial because our treatment decisions really do need to be made rapidly, and we need to sort of make the right choices for this patient in front of us. And we do have several tools that can help guide us in these situations, of course, including physical exam and patient history. So Dr. Z, that brings me to my question, which is, I want to hear from you. What are sort of your first steps when you're presented with that classic case of cardiac versus respiratory in a cat?
Thank you. I guess I'll start off with, that is the conundrum, isn't it? You have the cat coming in. Usually you have the chief complaints of either ADR, which ain't doing right, or the cat's wheezing, the cat's coughing, the cat's hunched over, the cat just seems to have trouble breathing. Those are our typical entry complaints by the client. So as we all know, a good patient history from the client is of paramount importance. Is this an acute presentation? Is this a seasonal appearance? Is this recent? Has it been chronic? Is this a new patient? Do we have a history prior to that? And then going further, I look at ages of the cat. You know, unfortunately, in my experience with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, I've seen it run from kittens 6 months of age onward over to like 10 years of age. The youngest one I've ever had in my clinical career was at 3 months of age. Hmm. Okay, we know peak is 5 to 7 years of age. It's irrelevant, but what's the age of our patient? Then also breeds. Some breeds are more predisposed to heart issues over respiratory. If you have a Maine Coon, you have a Sphinx, you have a Ragdow, a Persian, even a Bengal, I'd be leaning a little bit more toward heart as my first primary rule out over respiratory. If you have a Siamese, I'll probably have the needle pushing a little bit more toward respiratory. But we sit there, and often you get, well, I think my cat's wheezing. And very often with the client, they confuse wheezing and stridor. you know? They confuse a cough with a gag. So physical exam, your body temperature, your body weight. The respiratory rate, is the cat having tachypnea or breathing rapidly? Is there an abdominal component to the expiration? Is the cat congested? Obviously, auscultating the heart, listening for a rhythm, ideally, is there a murmur? Is there not a murmur? I don't often hang my hat on the fact that if there's no murmur, it can't be heart disease. I felt often people talk about heart disease in cats as a silent killer. I usually typify it more as the woulda, coulda, shoulda situation. Mm-hmm. So let's start with our typical cat. We have a ragdoll that comes in. It's just started acting weird. It's a little hunched over. It's off on food. I think it's gagging. I think it might be hairballs. Okay. We listen to it. It does have an expiratory component. There's maybe a little crackles when you listen to the lungs. No murmur. Heart's elevated. Respiratory rate's elevated. And the temperature's, it's the lower end of normal, but nothing that grabs you. It doesn't have blue gums. It's not open mouth breathing. Are we dealing with an allergy / asthma? Are we dealing with a respiratory thing? And that's the conundrum. Where do we go from here? Because again, going back to the woulda, coulda, shoulda, we all know that if it is a heartbeat issue and we're trying to treat this for asthma, we're trying to do it as expeditiously and cost-effectively for always the older widow woman client, you don't want to necessarily give it that corticosteroid injection or put it on corticosteroids, because we do know corticosteroids can exacerbate or even fulminate congestive heart failure in these subclinical cats. And injections are like insults or compliments. Once you give them, you can't take them back. So where do we go from here? In the ideal world, we would do x-rays, echocardiography, maybe even a POCUS tableside. MRI, CAT scans, we could do all that. Go down with a bronchoscope. But the reality of life is you may be in a situation where you don't have access right away to all this diagnostic equipment. You might be in a situation where there are cost prohibitive concerns based on the client. Okay. It's wonderful to think about doing a $1,500 MRI, but not if the client can't afford it. So, and that's assuming you have basically at the conclusion of your physical exam, a stable patient. You don't necessarily want to sedate a patient that's subclinical, that you may just cause more stress on that cardiovascular system. So here's the situation. Is it respiratory? Is it cardiac? You know what? We might want to do x-rays. We might want to do an ultrasound. We might want to even think about pre-oxygenation just to really get this patient feeling well. But maybe we can take a step back and get some basic blood work. Let's look at our cardiac enzymes and let's see what that's telling us. It's going to give us an idea of which way we're pointing. Are we more respiratory? Are we more cardiac? And then with that information, we can make much better and informative decisions, not only for ourselves, but for the patient and the client.
Absolutely. And yeah, like you said, I think this really isn't a diagnostic challenge if you've got a cardiologist down the hall or you've got some of those more advanced tests. But in general practice, when there are limitations with either equipment or, like you said, financial, these do become really important questions. And I know you mentioned radiography, and I want to dive in there because it can be an important tool. So I want to ask you, what exactly are you looking for if you're doing radiographs in a cat like this that can help you distinguish between cardiac and respiratory? And a big question I have here is, how do you handle patients that may be unstable in terms of actually obtaining those x-rays? And then I also want to follow up by asking, what are the limitations if you do get radiographs in these cases?
Okay. Wonderful, wonderful questions. So let's dive into that. We have the cat in the exam room. It's an acute presentation. And we're kind of like, should it be respiratory? Should it be cardiac? The client does want to do some rudimentary workup. Okay. The client knows you can take radiographs. The cat, is it stable enough where you can take x-rays? Some states will allow you to restrain a cat without sedation, but even that can be stressful on the cat. So let's approach this. We want to proceed with survey x-rays. If you have access to an oxygen cage or even an oxygen mask, assuming that the cat will tolerate it, pre-oxygenation with just straight oxygen helps. Oxygen is good. Oxygen is a euphoric. Oxygen can help if these cats are experiencing either a respiratory or a cardiac issue. So if we can give some oxygen ahead of time, wonderful. If you are able to take x-rays without sedation and the cat will allow you to, sometimes just a lateral view is diagnostic enough. Because if you do have congestive heart failure, if you do have chylothorax or pleurisy or fluid in the chest, you don't necessarily want to roll it down on that VD because you may just flood the remaining lungs. It's always an after. So let's assume we get that right lateral view and that's all we can get. Now we look at it. Are we seeing, you know, bronchial or edema? Are we seeing the classic left atrial, left ventricular enlargement? Are we getting, ideally, the VD shot where you see the classic Valentine heart? But often in these subclinical cases, we'll take the survey x-ray and it's like, the vertebral heart score, it's not that large. You know, maybe that auricle's a little big, but you're still kind of left with, it's not congestive heart failure. There's no fluid there. I don't see any lumps or bumps where it's a neoplasia. It doesn't suggest a fungal infection. So I'm still kind of back to where I am. Is it a heart problem? Is it a respiratory problem? Because it's not giving me much of anything. So that's if you can do the x-ray. Now let's take the situation where you can't. The cat's fractious. You don't feel comfortable enough yet sedating this cat. You just don't know. Again, let's obtain some basic blood work before we spend $200 or $300 on survey x-rays that may be counterproductive by adding undue stress to the cat. Let's get some basic blood work. So let's look at a troponin value. Let's look at an NT-proBNP. And of those, the NT-proBNP is the most diagnostic and informative for us in these situations. It's released by the heart. It increases in value when we have stretching of the left ventricular walls, and it's stress-related. Troponin, we all know, goes with heart muscle. If you can get an SAA, that's an inflammatory protein, that'll show inflammatory changes even before you see it in your routine CBC. But let's talk about the NT-proBNP. That is your moneymaker. If your NT-proBNP is normal, you can feel fairly confident that it's not going to be a cardiac-based issue. On the other hand, if it's elevated, you can feel fairly confident that you are dealing with a cardiac-based issue. It is a nice rule-in, rule-out test. Mm-hmm. It's quick. It can be done in-house. And it's very informative. And unlike typical BNP, the NT-proBNP is very, very stable. So you can have this as a reliable test indicator.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I think what's really changed in recent years, I know when I first started practicing, being able to get that value in real time was not possible. And so you really were reliant on your other testing options like radiographs. But now we have the capability to do this test at the point of care setting. Of course, BioNote B-Check is an option there where you can quickly get results. So I want to hear from you. What does that look like in your clinic? Like, how quickly are you getting the results back in those cases? And how, maybe dive in a little bit on just how reliable those numbers are in terms of ruling in and ruling out heart disease in your patient.
Okay, wonderful. As I said, we now have the ability to do these cardiac enzymes in-house. Tableside, I think, is the operative word in industry. It is a game changer. So again, we have Miss Sue with Felix, who has this respiratory issue. They're on fixed income, but they do have funding to a certain point, but they need to know, is it heart-based? Is it respiratory-based? what's going on. They have time. So our licensed veterinary technicians can obtain blood work, and we can get results back even with after a centrifuge. Let's say 30 minutes in and out from blood draw to answers. Now, going back to your previous question, how comfortable do I feel about the value with an NT proBNP? I say it's almost like gospel for cats. If that value is elevated, it is going to be 99 times out of 100 a cardiac-based issue. If it's not elevated, I'll do a flip side. You can still have a cardiac-based issue maybe 5 times out of 100, but it is an incredible, useful, important aid that you can do immediately to decide, is it heart, is it respiratory? Now, the NT-proBNP comes back normal. Okay, let's again talk to Miss Sue with Felix. You know what? I have a very strong confidence that this is not going to be a heart-based issue. We still can consider doing ultrasound. We can consider doing survey x-rays and really confirm our suspicions, or we can try some empirical care and see how your cat responds. Now let's flip it on its head. You know that NT-proBNP is significantly elevated. We were also able to get a little bit of extra blood, and we looked at the troponin value. And that value is also elevated, which is suggestive that the heart wall itself is getting thickened. Now, I think this is more of a heart-based issue. I know there's no murmur, but you don't often have to have a murmur in these subclinical cases. I know we have a young cat, but we have all the signs suggesting that we have a cardiac issue. Now, should we think about doing a Doppler blood pressure, see if we have hypertension? Now, should we think about getting an ultrasound? Because I think your cat will tolerate the ultrasound a little bit easier over a survey x-ray. And if we're lucky enough with that ultrasound, we'll be able to measure that left ventricular wall, which will be basically confirmatory of what that NT-proBNP test has already informed us about. That's how I would approach this, and that's how I use this. It's not exclusionary of these other diagnostic methods, but we can get quick, informed answers with a minimum of investment and a minimum of stress placed on the patient.
And that's huge because, like you said, these differentials really do have different treatment options, and it can really help avoid you giving, like you said, steroids to a patient that doesn't need them where it may be detrimental. So it really has changed the way we can practice in the last, the last decade from when I graduated. I remember things were different and we just really didn't have that option available. So finally, Dr. Zoyowski, I want to ask you, what's your key piece of advice or any additional advice for general practitioners, again, facing this classic heart or lung question in the middle of a feline emergency? Stress is running high. What's one takeaway you want everyone to remember?
I guess the big takeaway from this whole podcast, this whole conversation is you have the ability right now in your day practice to provide examination in real time for cardiac enzymes. You have the ability to get a diagnostic plan, a very high degree of certainty of a diagnostic answer by running simple blood tests. It does not dissuade you from x-rays, ultrasound, POCUS tableside ultrasound, Doppler blood pressures, bronchoscopy, all the other stuff, but it gives you the key on which direction you should go, and it allows you to have an informed consent conversation about what our goals are with the client and the patient. Again, what we want to do is provide the best possible care at the shortest interval of time with the highest degree of certainty. These cardiac tests answer all those three concerns.
Absolutely. It's a great tool in our toolbox to have. The more tools we have, the better off our patients will be. So much good advice there, Dr. Zoyowski. I do think we have made it to Curiosity Corner, which is what I like to call our wrap-up segment, where we just fire some quick curiosity questions at our guests, if you are up for it.
Absolutely. Okay. I always said, it's never the questions that get you in trouble. It's always the answers.
Fair enough. All right. Number one is, what's one hobby or interest of yours that your coworkers may not know about or would be surprised to learn?
Well, they will find out if they listen to this podcast, but let's roll the dice. When I was at the University of Tennessee, I fenced.
Oh. And no one knows about this.
My wife knows, but that's about it. Not even my children know.
Are you serious? Was it like on a team or just for fun?
So that was my hobby / sport.
I love that. That is too fun.
Yes. Yeah. It was, you know, it was an unusual sport. It was a very unusual opportunity and I enjoyed it. And I have many, many fond memories. And I wish I could tell you I was good at it, but I won't lie to you.
That's all right. It sounds cool anyway. All right. Number two for you is, what's your next planned trip?
Okay. Are we talking domestic or international?
I think whatever's next.
Okay. I'm at the point, I got my wife convinced, I think we're going to take the Trans-Canada via rail from Toronto, Canada to Vancouver, looking at the entire Canadian rail, you know, landscape via rail.
That is awesome. And you are our second guest recently to say that is their next trip. So that is really awesome and something that I didn't even know was possible. So we'll have fun. Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay. Last for you is, what is your favorite type of case to see walk into one of your exam rooms?
Honestly, my favorite case is when you have the 2.5-pound, you know, Chihuahua / Terrier, you know, the pocket pet sized dog owned by the former football player who's like 6'8", 280 pounds, who just absolutely adores that dog. There's just something wonderful about that, you know?
I love that too. And I'm a little dog. I've become a little dog girl. So yeah. I love when other people embrace the little dog lifestyle too, especially when it has that juxtaposition to it. But well, Dr. Swarovski, like I said, thank you so much for being here today and sharing your expertise with us. Of course, a big thank you to BioNote as well for making this conversation possible. And to our audience, thanks for listening in. We will catch you next episode.
Thank you so much for having me. This was such an enjoyable experience. And in conclusion, go Bills.
Oh, you got me there. Thanks again for joining us and thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. While you're there, please make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. We would appreciate if you leave us all the stars. You can also listen to podcasts on our website at cliniciansbrief.com/podcast. And you can also drop us a line at podcast@instinct.vet. Clinicians Brief Partner Podcast is an Instinct production.